help this morning, Lord, and for all these things. We ask it in the name of Jesus and give you thanks. Amen. Isaac blesses Jacob. Isaac is going to grow up. He's going to marry Rebecca, and he is, here again, the son of promise, which I'm sure he heard his dad Abraham tell him on continuous times, that you are going to be the father of many nations, just as God has told me. You are the start of this. You are the promised son. So he is thrilled about this, probably eager to get started to form nations under him, and he marries a lady named Rebecca, and they get married, and several years pass, and they discover that Rebecca is barren. Once again, another obstacle in the way of the promises of God. God has promised this, and now Isaac is wondering, what in the world? I'm the promised son, and my wife is barren, unable to have children. So instead of going and jumping into today's lesson, I got to do a little bit of background, as a couple chapters earlier, where when he was, I want to read a little bit of how that he goes to the Lord in prayer for his barren wife, and God not only blesses them with children, he blesses them with twins, and God makes a pronouncement to Rebekah, and it says, "And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of so-and-so, and Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived." God blessed them with children. "And the children struggled together within her." They fought together. "So much so that she said, if it be so, why am I thus? Why am I having to go through this wearisome birth or pregnancy? Because they're fighting inside of me." So she went to the Lord to inquire of the Lord. Why is her pregnancy so difficult? "And the Lord said unto her, 'Two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people,'" two different, completely different types of people, "are in your womb. They shall be separated from thy bowels. The one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder, the one who comes out first, shall serve the younger." Now this was a pronouncement that God made to Rebekah, who was entreating God or asking God, "Why am I having such a difficult time?" So God makes the announcement to Rebekah. It's important to remember that Rebekah heard from God that two nations are in your womb. They're going to be completely different young men. They're going to form completely different nations. And the oldest one is going to serve the youngest one, which is very unusual. It's a very unusual prophecy that God has just given Rebekah. So she knows this. We have to assume that she relays this to Isaac, but we have no idea. The Bible doesn't tell us if she relays this to Isaac to the point where he knows this, but we have to assume that she revealed this to him. But the children are born, and when they come out, obviously they even look different. It's one of the strangest descriptions of a birth in the Bible. When Esau comes out, he's red and hairy all over, and you're starting to think, my word, that's an unusual baby. I'm sure it was mainly the hair on the head. I can't imagine what our minds will run away with us when we read this. But then out comes Jacob, and he's just as plain, and anyway, they come out, they look different, and as they grow up completely different. The Bible tells us that Esau is a man of the field and of the hunt. He is wild and kind of presumptuous, and he just acts on a whim. He's adventurous. He is someone who somewhat untamed, someone that can just leave the encampment with his bow and arrow and maybe gone for days at a time, and no one knows where he is, and he comes back with venison. And for whatever reason, Isaac, and here again, this hurts us because we don't know Isaac's history necessarily, his hobbies, his loves, his personality. He has an affinity for Esau. Esau, the hunter, the outdoorsman, the adventurer, the field guy, the guy that's got, he's the man's man with the big hands, and you know, he's been out in the earth and all that. But Jacob's completely opposite of Esau. Jacob's more domesticated. He's more, stays around the home, does his chores, helps out. He's more dutiful. As I studied the two differences, where Esau is wild and pretentious and just does whatever he wants, he's untamed, Jacob is very dutiful. Whatever the rules of the house are, that's what he's going to abide by. He's going to help his mother. He's going to do the chores. He is quiet and plain-spoken and soft-spoken, completely different. But Isaac, the Bible tells us, loved Esau. He loved that personality. Whereas Rebekah loved Jacob. Did she love Jacob because he was more domesticated, more dutiful, more like someone who would sit around the supper table and talk about the day where Esau was, I gotta go. You know, we don't know these things. We have to just pretend in our hearts and our minds of what it could have been that made Rebekah love Jacob and Isaac love Esau, which was the start of this. And we've taught this lesson before, and the first thing we try to learn is not to have favorites, especially when you have children. You know, I imagine it is difficult as a parent sometimes to not have a favorite child, but you're not supposed to even show that because the other child certainly picks up on it. And we imagine that Jacob and Esau picked up on the other parent's love for the other sibling. We don't know. There is obviously a little bit of a rivalry here, so much so that during one of Esau's times out in the field, he comes running back into the camp. He's exhausted, been gone for several days. He's famished and starving to death. And he comes into the tent and he tells Jacob, who's the domesticated guy who helps in the cooking, he knows how to do certain things, and he goes, I'm about to die here. I haven't eaten, I'm starving, and if I don't eat something, I'm going to die. Make some of that porridge or that pottage that you make so much. Make it for me right now or lest I die. And Jacob senses a time of weakness here. Jacob shows a little bit of his cunning and a little bit of his personality, and he tells Esau, I'll do it on one condition. I do it that you give me your birthright. Now, what is that? I mean, the birthright means that if you're the firstborn, you have the right of all the wealth of the family name. You have the responsibility to carry on the family name because you're going to be the firstborn, and you have the weight of that on your shoulders, that I'm going to receive the wealth of my family and I'm going to expand upon it. That's the responsibility I have. As the birthright, I'm going to receive it because I'm the firstborn. Esau, who just loves to live day by day, hears this and says, well, what do I care? You know, if I don't eat, I'm going to die anyway. What is this birthright good for me? Yeah, you can have it. Sells him his birthright verbally, and of course he gets his pottage and he goes on and doesn't think a thing about it, which shows that Esau never truly considered the responsibility, the sacredness, or the importance of a birthright in the family of these biblical families in these biblical times. It was extremely important, especially when your whole family is living under the promise from God that he is going to make you a nation in itself, a great nation, and that other nations are going to follow you. So we learn a little bit about both brothers during that episode. Now Jacob believes he's got the birthright. Esau probably forgets that he even done it for a while, doesn't even care about it. And Jacob is keeping that in his heart. So we enter into today's lesson where Isaac and Rebekah get into play, because in the 27th chapter of Genesis, we pick up in verse 2. Verse 1 tells us that Isaac was old, and in verse 2 it says what he said. It picks up with him speaking, and it said, he said, behold, now I am old. We believe he was 137 years old at this time. Behold, I am old, and I know not the day of my death. He's in bad shape, bad health. He thinks he could die at any moment. And so he knows he has to give a blessing because he's about to die in his mind. Now, therefore, take, I pray thee, he's talking to Esau. He brings Esau in and he's telling Esau this. Take thy weapons, thy quiver and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison. Kill me a deer and make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me that I might eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. Important statement there. He's telling Esau, go kill something, cook it the way I like it, bring it to me, and let me eat of it. And when I eat of it, I'm going to bless you. This is the blessing that both Jacob and Esau knew would come at some point. And here again, you have to understand that even though Esau didn't think much of his birthright, they knew the importance of the blessing. They believed that whatever blessing came out of the mouth of their father was actually going to happen because he spoke it. We, of course, know that it's all directed by God. The blessing is a pronouncement of the promises of God, but God is in control of that. A man's words can't perform the blessing. God performs the blessing, but the man's blessing is pronouncing through the promises that he's received from God. So blessing is saying a blessing is very powerful, but only God can perform the blessing, not the man. So Esau, who's believing it's coming from the man, wants to go out there and kill the venison, cook it up, bring it back, because this is going to change his life. He's going to receive that blessing that he's known about all these years. Now, we have to also understand that Esau is a middle-aged man at this point. You know, Isaac was 40 years old when he married. He's 137 now. Esau and Jacob, pretty old fellas. They're middle-aged right now. Esau's married. He's been married to he's got two wives himself. Jacob has not married, but Esau is a fully grown, middle-aged man, married, and he's finally getting the blessing that he's been waiting on for so long. So he goes out to receive to go and get the food. Now, the interesting part is, instead of Isaac giving him the blessing right there, he makes it conditional on, I want you to do something for me. I want you to go out and do this, kill this deer, cook it, and bring it to me. There's a time span there. He wants to enjoy the whole point of contact that he has. One of the very things that he loves about his son, which is the outdoorsman, the adventurous spirit, he wants to enjoy that part of his son that he loves the most while he is right before he grants him the blessing. That while he feels the blessing is so important that he wants to be totally enraptured in the whole idea of giving it, that he's wanting to enjoy this meal with the son that he's about to give the blessing to. So he says, I'm not just going to have you come in my tent and I give you the blessing and leave. I want us to have a meal together. I want this to be a time of bonding. But that was a time that allowed Rebekah to get involved with this. Rebekah, who had known from God who the elder was going to serve the younger. So, verse 5, and Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison to bring it. And then she goes and she gets Jacob. She pulls him from whatever duty he's doing and she brings him in. And verse 8 says, now therefore, my son, Jacob, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock and fetch me from there two good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory meat for thy father and such as he loves. We're going to deceive him. I want you to do what he's told Esau to do. You go get the goats, and I'm going to cook them, and you're going to take them to your father, and thou shalt bring it to thy father that he may eat and that he may bless you before his death. Rebekah thinks he's going to die too. You know, the fascinating part about this is Isaac is going to live for 43 more years. He's only sick. He thinks he's going to die. He's 137 years old. He's going to die at 180. He can't see very well. Whatever condition he's under, he is pronouncing that whatever I'm under, whatever I'm going to die. This is surely the end. And now, you know, Rebekah's believing the same thing. So she brings in Jacob. We've got to act fast. I want the blessing to go to you, Jacob. So Jacob is concerned about this. But he goes and he fetches and he brought to his mother, and his mother made savory meat such as his father loved. Now, what's not in your scripture is important, because Jacob here, who is cunning, he's conniving as well. He's worried because a blessing, if you deceive your father who's about to give a blessing, you might get the curse, which was just as dramatic. If your father cursed you, then your descendants would be cursed. So Jacob, even though he is a conniver at heart, he is concerned over this. He's worried about it. So he complains to his mother, you know, how is this going to happen? And Rebekah took the goodly raiment of her elder son. This is not in your quarterly. I'm going to read it. She took the clothing of Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of those goats that they just killed, the goat skins, upon, boy, Esau must have been a hairy fella. I mean, she put goat skins on his hands just to mimic what Esau felt like, and upon the smooth of his neck. And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came into his father and he said, my father. And he says, here am I. Who art thou, my son? So Isaac, who can't see very well at all, is asking, who is this? Because the voice is throwing him off a little bit. And Jacob said unto him, I am Esau, thy firstborn, the first lie, he says. I have done according as thou hast bid me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. This is the words of Jacob. And Isaac said unto his son, how is it that thou hast found it so quickly? And he said, because the Lord thy God, the Lord your God, brought it to me. He's asking who he thinks is Esau, well, how'd you get the deer so quick? You've only been gone for a few hours. It usually takes you a day or more. And Jacob, trying to think quickly, but now brings God into the deception, says, the Lord your God, which kind of gives us an idea that Jacob is not truly acquainted with the Lord at this point in his life. The Lord your God has brought it to me. And Isaac said unto Jacob, come here, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son. And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him, and said, ah, the voice is Jacob's, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. Now, what did Isaac just do? Isaac was given the warning of the voice. He heard Jacob's voice, but yet all he wanted to bless Esau so badly that all he really needed was some confirmation. He's got the warning here. He's got the conviction here that's trying to stop him, that something's not right. You know, and we're trying to learn here. When we are doing something that we probably may not be in God's will of doing, and we get a check, when that check comes in, the voice is not the right voice. Pay attention to that. We need to pay attention to that voice. Isaac doesn't. He's wanting to pour the blessing so much upon Esau that he forgets the voice only because he has something that he can grab onto. He can grab the hairy hand of Jacob and say, ah, this is the confirmation I need. This is the confirmation that I need that this is my son Esau. That's for us to learn from. Don't forget about the check we get when we're trying to make a huge decision in our life. When God allows a check to come upon us, we may have to receive that check. Don't look for something that may be minor just to confirm what we truly want to do. And that's what Isaac has done. He's forgotten about the check that has come upon him, and he's given in because he sees the hairy hand. He feels the hairy hand. So, as he starts to bless him, he gives him this blessing. He came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, and he blessed Jacob and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore, here's the blessing. God give thee of the dew of heaven, every blessing out of heaven, may it be bestowed upon you, and the fatness of the earth, plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee. This is the blessing that Isaac is giving to Jacob, who he thinks is Esau. And let nations bow down to thee, to be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's son bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. That's the blessing that they gave, that he gave Jacob. Now here again, we have to remember the importance of how they conceive hearing a blessing from their father, what they believe that means for them. They believe that what their father has just given them in this blessing is actually going to happen, and they're going to walk in faith of that blessing. They receive that blessing because they know that their father is repeating a promise that he had received from God Almighty, and that God's going to make this happen. So this is quite the astounding blessing. This is why Jacob was willing to deceive his own father. He was willing to to do something against his brother who had given him the birthright. And worst of all, he was willing to incorporate God into the deception by saying, God has allowed me to come this this quickly back to you with this deer. God provided so that I could be here quickly. God's in favor of what we're about to do. And Jacob clearly has no indication or no relationship with God to our knowledge at this time. So several things have happened, but Isaac, because he is wanting to bless Esau, he's wanting to follow the traditions, he's wanting to follow who he loved the most instead of who God wanted. And here again, we're making an assumption that Isaac probably knew the prophecy that God gave Rebekah, that the elder will serve the younger, but yet his desire for the older, for Esau, triumphed over him in his old age, to where he would say, "No, it's going to be what I want. I know best. The tradition is most important." So with this, the blessing has gone forth to Jacob. So Esau, who's still out there hunting, has found the deer, he's killed the deer, he's cooked it up, and he's ready to receive the blessing that he's waited his whole life. He's probably told his wives that, you know, I'm gonna go and get the blessing that I've been waiting for. All this is gonna be mine, and it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna multiply. So Isaac comes in, and we pick up in verse 32 Esau comes in, and we pick up where Isaac said unto him, "Who art thou?" He still can't see. Esau comes in, and Esau says, "I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau." And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, "Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed." Isaac is frantic over this because he knows the importance of the blessing. He believes fully that what he was about to do to him, thinking it was Esau, was going to perpetuate everything upon Esau's descendants. He believed fully in this blessing. So much so that now that he knows he's been deceived, he fully believes that Jacob will receive the blessing from him and Esau will not, which is truly going to happen, but it's because God had picked Jacob from the very beginning. So God had this, God didn't have the deception in play. God never wanted the deception. We have to, at the end of this lesson, we're wanting to go through all four of these individuals and see where they made the mistake. And one of the we can pick up on is that Rebekah worried because she heard what Isaac was going to do and didn't trust God enough that he would take care of this. She had to fix this thing. You know, she didn't know Sarah, because Sarah died before Rebekah became Isaac's wife. So she didn't know Sarah, but she is doing exactly what Sarah did when God told Sarah, "You're going to give birth," or "Abraham's going to give birth to a promised son." And she's old, so she brings Hagar in. She's worried that, you know, God may want to give you a child, but I'm not going to be the one able to do it. We love God and we want to help God, so here's Hagar. And that's the wrong thing to do. Well, Rebekah is doing the same thing. She just doesn't know it. She knows because God has told her, God has given her a prophecy that Jacob's going to be the one with the blessing, not Esau. And here she hears her husband Isaac saying that, "I'm bringing Esau in here. I want you to go and kill this deer and bring it back, and I'm going to give you the blessing." She panics. And in her panic-stricken state, she acts upon it. She's going to make it happen. She's going to bring to fruition what God had said, this is how it's going to be. Now, there's nothing wrong with acting upon what God told you, but deception is never part of it. God doesn't need us to deceive others, to lie to others, to cheat, to steal. He doesn't require us or even want us to do that to bring about what he's told us is going to happen. And how easily we could fall into this trap. I could see easily how we ourselves could look at Rebekah's situation and she's going, "Oh no, this is going to happen. I mean, all he's got to do is kill the deer and it's done." When we say we've got to put our trust in God, that's the test right there. Because time is now clicking. Rebekah's worried. Her favorite's Jacob anyway. I mean, I can certainly understand Rebekah's move. And as deceptions go, when you start on a small deception, it grows, doesn't it? When you, it's like when somebody says, when you first tell the first lie, you usually have to tell other ones to back up the lie that you started with that keeps growing. And the deception has kept growing. She just said, hey, your father can't see anything. Go kill a couple goats. We'll fix it up and he'll bless you. And Jacob goes, well, wait a minute. You know, Esau's a hairy fella. I'm slick skinned. What? He's going to know better. All right, well, let's do this. Let's fool him even more. And then Jacob goes in there and Isaac says, your voice doesn't sound like Esau. Or no, he goes in there and says, how did you get a deer so quickly? Well, the God you serve provided it for me so I could be here this quick. Now God's involved in this thing. So it keeps getting bigger and bigger. So God does never require us to deceive people just because we want his word to us to come to fruition. He doesn't need our deception to make his will come forth. And that's where Rebekah has made the mistake. So what does all this deception bring? To her, she's probably thinking it's worth it. Jacob's got the blessing, and everything is good. My deception, I had to do it. There's no other way to do it. It worked. It's good. All right, let's everything calm down. Well, Esau explodes. As you can imagine, Esau gets all upset, and we won't read his reaction, but you can imagine what Esau does. He says, I'm going to kill my brother. I'm going to kill that guy. He deceived my fathers out of my blessing, so now I'm going to struggle my whole life. My descendants won't be blessed, so I'm going to kill him. Well, he makes a statement, says, I'm going to kill him as soon as my father dies, and the mourning period's over. He doesn't know his daddy's got 43 more years to live, but he's going to kill him right as soon as his dad dies, and the mourning's over. I'm going to kill my brother, and the word gets back to Rebekah. Well, here's your scheming. Here's what happens. Jacob's going to die now. Esau's going to kill him. So her favorite son, who has been with her all these years, whom she deceived her husband so that he would receive the blessing, now she's got to do something else because now she's worried her son's going to die and get killed. So she goes to Jacob and she tells him to flee. Let me just pick up on verse 32 and what she says. And these words of Esau about killing her son were told to Rebekah, and she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, behold, thy brother Esau is touching thee, doth comfort himself, proposing to kill thee. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise and flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran. I want you to leave this land. You got to flee for your life. Go to my brother Laban's house in his country. Stay there for a few days, because it says in verse 44, and tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away. So she's still expecting Isaac to die. She's expecting a few days to pass, and the mourning period's over. Esau will calm down, and Jacob will come back and live with her and take care of her the rest of her life because he's her favorite son, and she's done all this for him. What we know is that Jacob does flee, but now she's got to tell her husband Isaac why his son Jacob is no longer there. So she says, well, you know how troubled we've been because Esau married two Canaanite women and how disappointed we were that he didn't marry within his own race of people. He married the Canaanite women, and how they've been trouble to me all these years. Well, I've asked Jacob to go to our land, my brother's land, and take a wife there amongst our people, our brethren. So Isaac's saying, well, it is a trouble what Esau did with wives that were outside and idolatrous wives, and that's okay. So he's okay with Jacob leaving. What Rebekah doesn't know is that she'll never see her son again. Her scheming, her deceiving ways, where she was wanting him to receive the blessing so that he would come back and be blessed, and by being blessed, he would take care of her because she's expecting Isaac to die. But here comes the fact that Jacob is going to spend 20 years, in Laban's territory under his tutelage, 20 years serving Laban, and in those 20 years, Rebekah will die. She will die before Isaac dies. So she'll never see her son Jacob again, which gives us understanding once again that whenever you know God's will, when you hear God tell you something, when God informs you of something that he is going to come, it's going to come to pass in your life. When he is bringing this to pass, I'm going to bless you in this manner. You do not have to act on yourself when you don't see it going that way. Don't panic. We are not to panic and fret and say, I've got to make what God's promise told me, make it happen by my own ways, even if I have to deceive others. God never wants us to deceive or to cheat or to lie to bring about his will. And that's what Rebekah fell prey to. We easily can see why she did it, but we now see the consequences of it. The whole family is torn apart. Isaac, he has lost the desire to give. He can't give his blessing back to Esau. Jacob's gone. Rebekah will never see her son again. Esau and Jacob will be, they will only be reunited years later. So the whole family was torn apart by deceptive means made out of desperation. Because Isaac went against God's will and went for his own will, and that started the whole ball rolling. Rebekah panicked, knowing what God's will was, but didn't see it happening, how it could happen, so she was going to act upon it. Esau didn't have the proper respect for his birthright to begin with. He was willing to sell it. It doesn't mean anything to me. I'd rather eat and go out again to hunt later. I'm famished. I'll give you my birthright. It doesn't mean anything to me. And Jacob, who all along wanted the blessing and was willing to do whatever it took to receive it and to get it, even to go along with the deception that his mother said, let's do this. So all four had acted wrongly and paid a price for every bit of it. And what do we do with this? We have to take what we learned through this lesson and try to relate it to our daily lives. And it seems like such a big deal there, and we're not dealing with are necessarily a blessing over descendancy and things like that. But in our daily lives, when we speak to God and ask God to direct our lives, we have to be willing to not lean on our own understanding, but to trust him in all of our ways, acknowledge him, and let him direct our paths. And no matter what happens to us, if God has given us a promise, we have to hold on to the promise. Even when the clouds are rolling and nothing seems to be going towards that promise, and maybe a key person in that promise passed away early, and now how is this promise going to come to fruition because the players are gone? I've got to do something myself. All we have to do is continue to follow, trust, pray to God for him to direct our paths and leave it in his hands. We are not to fret about it and we are not to act upon it, no matter how tempting it is to make this come to pass. In the end, Jacob did receive the blessing that God had intended for him in a completely different way. God does bring about his will. His will be accomplished, though the consequences may be great to those who interfered. And the consequences were great upon Rebekah and upon the family, but in the end, Jacob did receive the blessing of God because he had it from the womb. And next week, we're going to get into how God will bless Jacob. Isaac gave Jacob the blessing that he thought was for Esau, but now God is going to get into the mix and talk to Jacob himself. We don't believe Jacob at this time had a true relationship with the Lord, but he's about to meet him. He's about to meet him in a powerful way. And out of this meeting that he makes with God, where God even changes his name from Jacob to Israel, we will see that God will have a pathway laid out in front of him, and Jacob will follow that pathway. Thank you for coming. That's our lesson for the day. We will see you again next week. Hope you have a wonderful week, and let's enjoy the music this morning.